The time is 9:02 a.m. on July 22nd, 2026, and I am convening this video conference and telephone conference meeting of the Personnel Committee of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act and the Association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice of the meeting was filed on July 10th, 2026, and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of the notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. A quorum is achieved as all three members of the committee have been confirmed to be present by video or audio conference. Also in attendance are Executive Director Bart Bowles, Executive Director Designate Jan Graber, General Counsel Dan Price, Association Employees Jarrett Terry and Topping Haggerty, and from the Department of Insurance is Sean Martin.
So, Jan, are we sharing any slides today?
No, I didn't anticipate sharing slides.
Is it okay if I share the book? Because
Absolutely.
you,
Yeah.
okay. I usually don't do this, people, so bear with me.
Or I can share it. I mean, I have the book open.
Yeah. Well, that way I can scroll through it if you need to go through the information. Let me get to it. Okay, let me. Can you see it?
Shortly. There we go. Yes.
Okay. And is it
Okay.
okay? Because I'm not. Okay. So let's get to let me get to item one. There we
So,
go.
item one, consideration and possible action on the consent agenda items. And so we've got a copy of the minutes, and there's a suggested resolution on page 1-1. Anyone have any comments on the minutes from the last meeting?
None for me, and I'll move to approve.
All right, and I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Item two, consideration of possible action on the non-salary benefits provided to association employees.
All right. So, annually, the Personnel Committee reviews the various non-salary benefits that are currently provided to the association employees. And a summary of those benefits was included on pages 2-2 through 2-4 of your meeting materials. Overall, there are just a few changes this year. Most of the benefits remain unchanged, and primarily there are updates involving insurance renewal premiums. So I'll start with our health insurance plan. We continue to offer the Blue Cross Blue Shield Gold plan. The benefits under that plan remain unchanged. However, the premium is increasing from about $69,000 per year to about 81, a little over 81,000 per year. That's an increase of about 18% or $12,000. Just a reminder for the committee, with Bart's retirement at the end of this year, that total premium is going to decrease after January 1st, since he will no longer be participating in the plan. We did get quotes on two alternative plans. From a cost and employee benefits perspective, neither alternative really presents a compelling reason to move away from the current Blue Cross Blue Shield renewal plan. In fact, the renewal plan really appears to be the best overall value, but I'll go through those alternatives briefly. And we did not provide these alternatives in the meeting material, but I'm happy to provide those if you want to look them over. But basically, the first alternative, it would save the association only about $660 per year in premium. But it would do that by shifting substantially more costs to employees. So it would double the annual deductible, and it would require employees to pay the full cost of many routine medical services and prescription drugs until that deductible is met. So in short, we would save less than 1% of premium while shifting a substantial amount of that first dollar medical cost to employees. So we didn't think that those trade-offs really justified the minimal savings. And then the second alternative, I think, was even less attractive. It cost about $1,900 more per year than simply renewing the current BCBS plan. It offers slightly lower copays for primary care and urgent care, but prescription drug copays are generally higher than under the current plan. And then that would also require employees to transition to a new carrier. So, you know, there's all kinds of issues associated with that. So, different provider networks. You know, if your current doctor is not in this new network, you've got to find a new physician, new prior auth cards, or requirements, or new ID cards. So we didn't think that those changes really justified either the higher cost or the disruption associated with changing carriers. So for those reasons, we're recommending that we renew the current BCBS plan, and that preserves our existing benefit structure and avoids any kind of disruption for employees. And I think that's the best overall balance between cost and coverage. So these rates would become effective October 1st of this year, I believe. So, unless there are questions, I can move on to the other insurance plans and benefits.
Committee, any questions about it? Seems pretty obvious choice to stick with what we've got.
Agree, no questions.
All
I have no
right.
questions. Agree, but did I just hear you say it becomes effective October 1?
I believe so. Isn't that correct, Bart? I think that's what I
Right.
saw.
Okay.
It's
The new
November 1.
premium rates are effective October 1st. That's what's in the renewal quote.
Okay.
And that
Yes.
kind of aligns with when we, you know, because we were waiting for renewal quotes before we sent out the meeting materials. And we always get those, from what I understand, right at July 15th.
Gotcha.
Just
Okay. Very good.
all
No problem.
righty. As far as dental insurance, we, you know, provide a PPO dental plan that's provided through Lincoln Financial. The association pays 100% of the employee premium. There's no change to either the plan or the premium this year, and that current premium will remain guaranteed through September 30th of next year. We also have a health reimbursement arrangement where we reimburse employees for eligible out-of-pocket medical and dental expenses. That includes things like deductibles, copays, prescription drug copays. The plan allows 50% of the unused portion of an annual $1,750 reimbursement amount per year. 50% of that can be rolled over at the end of the year into the next year, and then that can accumulate up to a maximum balance of $6,750. Our long-term disability insurance, that replaces about 66 and two-thirds percent of an employee's salary up to a maximum of $10,000 per month. There is a 90-day waiting period. There is a modest premium increase of 5% because the premiums for this type of coverage are so small, that really equates to only about $124 per year. For group life and AD&D coverage, we provide coverage up to 2 times an employee's salary, up to a maximum of $250,000. The renewal also includes an increase in the guaranteed issue amount. So right now, that $250,000 consists of a $125,000 guaranteed issue amount. And then to get up to that max of 250,000, you have to go through medical underwriting. So the benefits consultant did get a quote from our carrier Lincoln to increase that guaranteed issue amount from 125,000 to 170,000. And that would be for an additional premium of $169 per year. The total maximum amount stays at $250,000. So I think this change in the guaranteed issue amount, it will allow future employees to really get more coverage without going through medical underwriting. So we're recommending that the committee approve that change. As far as the 401k retirement plan, we continue to offer that. That includes a 4% employer contribution. That's regardless of whether the employee contributes to the plan. And then there's an additional matching contribution of 50% of the first 6% of an employee contribution. There's also a 457 retirement plan for the executive director. The materials for this meeting included a note that there are no remaining discretionary contributions under the current under Bart's plan, and that my employment agreement includes an annual employer contribution beginning in January 2028. So that will be discussed more under agenda item 4. And then we continue to provide employees with paid vacation, sick leave, personal leave, and then 12 paid holidays each year. We also provide paid garage parking for employees, and there is an education reimbursement plan where employees are reimbursed for approved education or professional development expenses up to $5,000 per year. So with that, I'll pause and see if there are any questions.
None for me.
Sounds like there are none.
Okay. And I wasn't sure, do we need to formally does the committee need to formally accept the 18% increase in the medical plan and the increase in the life insurance guaranteed issue amount, or is that a formal?
Normally, Jan, we have only asked the committee to recommend adoption or recommend resolution to the board for adoption. If we're changing carriers and making a wholesale change in the plan, incremental increases in premiums and small adjustments in benefits, we just ask for comments from the committee, and hearing none, that's within your authority to
Okay.
renew and move forward.
Okay. So, unless there are any thoughts otherwise, we'll go ahead and recommend moving forward with those things.
Okay, sounds
All
good.
right.
Moving on to item 3, consideration and possible action on revisions to the employee handbook. So Jan has a couple of potential revisions to discuss.
Right. So this agenda item presents two proposed additions to the employee handbook. And those are really intended to reflect our current operating practices and provide clear guidance for employees. Both of these policies have been reviewed by our general counsel, Dan Price. And if recommended by this committee and approved by the board, that will be incorporated into the employee handbook. The first proposal is a personal cell phone stipend policy. So, right now, all employees really rely on their personal cell phones to conduct association business. And that includes use of multi-factor authentication, access to our network and office systems, monitoring email, et cetera. So because employees are, routinely using their personal devices for business purposes, we're recommending that the committee accept a formal cell phone policy. And a description of that policy is included on pages 3-2 through 3-6 of the meeting materials. So, the question with this is really how should we reimburse employees for that business use? One option is to require employees to submit a monthly reimbursement request, and that would include, copies of their phone bills, et cetera. And the other is to provide a fixed monthly stipend. So rather than requiring employees to submit monthly reimbursement requests, we're recommending a $35 monthly stipend for each employee. And this really avoids the administrative burden with processing those monthly reimbursement requests. And we arrived at that proposed $35 stipend by reviewing common employer practices for programs like this. And we found that typical stipends range from anywhere from about $30 to $50 per month. And because, we're a small organization, we were thinking that $35 per month would be an appropriate amount that fairly recognizes the business use of, employees' personal phones. So the proposed policy outlines, employee responsibility, establishes eligibility requirements for employees, and then it will require each employee to acknowledge that policy before they receive the stipend. So if there's, I'll pause for any questions. The one thing that the committee might want to think about, we don't have an effective date yet being proposed for this policy. So if you do agree with our recommendation on this policy, we need to decide when it becomes effective. I guess it be could become effective as early as, maybe September 1st, or we could wait until, the first of the year, whatever the committee decides. So I'll pause here and see if there are any questions on this issue.
Any questions?
Simpler is better.
I just had a question more for the committee because we're all working in different places. What's y'all's experience at your organizations on what is the value that's provided in these types for your, I mean, I know we're going from a great range with principal being huge, right? To the community hospitals for Frank, but
Well, ours
yeah.
is a little bit different because of HIPAA. My phone is actually it's a hosp it's under the hospital's policy or account, the AT&T account. The number is, it was a number I had and carried over, but we have different uses in terms of, how to access and the privacy and things like that, where it's pretty well protected. At any time, I could zero out my phone. So it's a little bit different. But I will tell you, we did have a policy set up where the value was $50 a month at one point. So we're certainly well within in range here.
Yeah, and just to be clear, Bart and Jared and Jan did a lot of research, I think, on this. But I've done my own research as well. So like Jan said, there is just this range that's out there about what people do. So
Well, the idea of having to submit your cell bills and go through that and try to check off what call was this, that, and the other, that's administratively just incredibly restrictive. But we would never do that here, and I would never want to impose that on anybody, the association for sure.
Right.
Tim?
And I will say that we had a similar policy when I was at ACLI. And I believe the monthly stipend was we had an internet stipend and a cell phone stipend. And I believe they were each right at $45 a month.
Yeah. Principals is zero. It's just the way principal does it. But I agree, a stipend is the way to go. Submitting reimbursement requests would be a nightmare.
Yeah, and I will add to that just as counsel, one of the things I've seen before in the past from this end is that cell phone usage was being mined by an employer, and to the point of like whether they're communicating about work stuff, worried about people gossiping, all that kind of stuff about matching up numbers. It was really a mess of this case that came through. So supporting Jan and Mart's decision on just a stipend as well from that perspective. So anyway, thank you guys. Sorry, that was more of a curiosity from council. It has nothing to do with the policy.
And don't shut that off yet. I think the chair may have a comment.
No, I'm good. I agree with the proposal.
I do have one thought, real quick, Dan, if you could maybe elaborate on this. One of the things that we have also dealt with, and I don't know that this is necessarily relevant, but something to keep in mind, is in the event of any type of litigation where the employees are drawn in and cell phone records, be it text messages and things of that nature. I can't recall because we've had to, gosh, I've had to go through that more than I care to say. Is there something we want? Is there something about that, Dan, that we, is there any reason to maybe address that in a policy? Or I don't know. Again, we have to maintain things because of that. And I just, when we're paying a stipend just for someone's personal need to understand that. Yeah, that's probably discoverable, any kind of communication should we end up getting into some kind of litigation. Walk us
Yeah,
through.
and that's correct. The information that's going to be used on the phone for any of the employees that's work related can be used or discoverable for anything that comes in litigation. For that reason, I don't think we need to put it in a policy, this specific one, but I'm happy to discuss that outside of it. Well, my recommendation is always to use the platforms that are tied to the organization for communication. That meaning use your Outlook email app to communicate about Guarantee Association stuff only. If you need to do an instant message, try not to use text message to do so. Use Teams messaging to do so. So any of that stuff makes it really clear about what's going to be pulled by the attorneys when they're looking at what information needs to be frozen. Now, we all have a text message. Bart and I
Right
text
now, that's the
about other coordination stuff, but not. There's never any substance by text. It's always through the platforms, as an example.
so you and Frank, that in Outlook you can't have separate accounts for so your business account and your personal account can be separated. On my phone, I don't even do separate accounts within Outlook. I use two different mail platforms, one mail platform for personal and a completely separate mail platform for business, just so everything is separated.
That's exactly
So
what I did
I
too.
think
The
that's
same
more of an
thing.
operational implementation, and
Right.
I don't think it, Dan, it needs to be defined in our usage agreement.
I agree. It doesn't have to be the
Yeah. And
submission.
aware, I think an awareness is just to be, again, clear. This is an awareness more than anything. Because we deal with it more than we care to think about.
Right. Correct.
And did the committee discuss a recommended start date?
When do you want to
Yeah.
start?
Yeah.
Are there any thoughts on that?
I would say once it's fully approved, I don't see why there's any problem with just starting it at the next, feasible, practically feasible time.
Yeah,
Agree.
the board is this on August 5th, and September 1st would be a reasonable start date, gives time to implement the documentation, review processes and usage, and get things set up.
Then September 1st works for me.
All right. So I'll go through this second proposal before I guess we can do both resolutions at the same time, or would y'all rather do the cell phone
I'm fine
resolution?
with hearing about the other one
All
first.
right. So that second proposal is a commercial credit card use policy. So with Bart's upcoming retirement, the association has a commercial card, but that needs to be replaced because it was personally guaranteed by Bart. So we've established a new commercial credit card program through JP Morgan Chase. That does not require a personal guarantee. We've been approved for a $30,000 credit limit, and then each employee spending limit is established based on business need. That program also provides a 1% cash back on purchases, and that will help offset operating expenses. The proposed policy defines, appropriate business uses, prohibited purchases. What we need to do as far as receipts and documentation, how we report things, and then any employee accountability for unauthorized charges. So each employee will be required to sign the policy before being issued the card. So I'll pause here and see if there are any questions on this issue. And if not, then we can move on to the resolutions.
Hey, on the previous card, I'm just asking because I don't know. Is 30,000 enough? Is it Bart? Did your card ever go higher than that?
And we never had any expenditures higher than that. I honestly, I can't even remember what the limit was, but it was around that neighborhood. I was
Amazing.
I was super real comfortable with it because if we were ever slow to pay, it's my personal credit got dinged. So this is a much better situation. But when we first set this up, the entity we got the card through had a hard time understanding what the association was and accepting our financials. And I got tired of arguing with them and I said, I'll just guarantee it. So.
We've unfortunately had to do the same thing, and we have about 30 to 34 credit cards, and it's all personally guaranteed by me because we run the EMS service, and all the trucks have cards to buy gas. And
right.
I do. We get the same issue, and the thing is it gets dinged about twice a year, meaning it gets hacked. We have to replace all the cards, seriously, about twice a year.
Oh,
And this
that's rude.
TIB, it is a nightmare. And we've tried the same thing. We've even tried to go down the American Express route. And they just don't understand, nonprofit governmental entity healthcare. So, yeah, I feel your pain, but anyway, well, you're good with that. I don't have a problem with that at all. We have the same type of policy here for all the employees that have cards.
I'll
And
mention one
Frank.
that Jarrett reminded me. Actually, these two things you're considering for the employee handbook are somewhat tied because the commercial credit card and how it works actually is managed and monitored by the individuals through a cell phone app that'll be on their personal cell phone. So everything's so intertwined now like that. Both these policies, implementing them together, make a lot of sense.
I wish we had it so easy because it's awful here. We have one AP clerk that has to handle every one of them through the app on the with the bank and coordinate everything every month. It's not as easy. Maybe I'll take advice to see what we may follow your lead.
And Frank, to your point about the limit, we do have the ability to make interim payments. They can be applied against that limit if we ever run up against that.
That's exactly, what read my mind. I think our limit's 75,000 or something like that. And if we run into that, we do the exact same thing. We'll throw a payment at them. And yeah, I know what you're doing. That's good. No, this is great.
Any other questions about the
Good work.
policies? Nope. Then we have resolutions. So do I have a, we'll
Yeah,
see those shortly, and we'll need a motion to recommend these to the board.
I'll move recommendation of the board of the two resolutions on page 310. And I guess with the cell phone, the month beginning on September 1st.
And I second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. Thank you. Move to item four, consideration and possible action on various elements of the executive employment and deferred compensation contract for the executive director.
All right. So there are actually two matters that are related to this. The first is the final longevity incentive payment for Bart. Under his executive employment and deferred compensation contract that was approved by the board back in 2018, he is eligible for a final longevity incentive payment in December of this year, provided that certain conditions are met. Specifically, the committee needs to confirm that his 2025 performance evaluation resulted in an average rating of at least 4 across all the performance factors, and that the audit of the association's 2025 financial statements did not identify any material misstatements or significant deficiencies. So, assuming that those conditions have been met and he remains employed through the payment date, the committee is asked to recommend that the board approve the final longevity incentive payment. There's also going to be an additional discussion item kind of relating to this issue in executive session. But I'll pause and see if there are any questions.
And Jan, can I
Okay.
clarify?
Go ahead, Mark.
David, on the prior two longevity incentive payments have been made to me, there were not committee recommendations for resolutions to be adopted by the board. I inserted this as an action item just because it's the final payment.
Okay.
Dan, I do not believe it's necessary because this is just a matter of monitoring. Does the committee feel the performance measures have been met? So it's a contractual, just carrying out the contractual requirements, but it's kind of belt and suspenders. We put a resolution in here, so it's just a little bit different what we've done in the past, David.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea. It essentially ratifies the actions of the contract up to the end. And
Well,
we've left it, David, for either you take action on it now, or if you wanted to have any discussions or deliberation in executive session, that's always your discretion. So it's up to you when you want to take the action. And
okay.
actually, I'll stop with my comments there. Jan, you have the other item under this that they'll need to
Right.
act.
Are there any questions about that first item?
No.
All
No.
right. So the second one then relates to my participation in the 457B plan. So my employment agreement provides for participation in that plan. And so the proposed resolution that you'll look at that simply ratifies and formalizes. Or formally approves my participation in that plan, and that's effective April 1st of this year. So that's consistent with the terms of my employment agreement. And so this action would actually just formalize the board's implementation of that employment benefit.
Right.
So
Sorry, Jane.
go ahead.
Yeah, on this one, very similar to what Bart was commenting on his contract. The approval of the contract was sufficient from a contractual standpoint and corporate governance to have Jan be admitted to the plan. Again, belt and suspenders, the 457 plan, the consultants recommended that there be a separate ratification just to make it real clear that she is admitted to the plan, and the ratification resolution says it's effective as of the date she started. So everything is the same. It's consistent. It's just making sure that we've got that separate resolution for in the event of a 457 audit. It's necessary to just pull that out and show them it's everything to Jan is appropriate.
Okay, so we could show those resolutions. And so, since these are both related to fulfilling contractual obligations, I'm fine with going ahead and entertaining a motion to recommend these to the board.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Anything else before executive session?
No.
Okay. So the time is 9:38 a.m. on July 22nd, 2026, and I am recessing the regular session of the Personnel Committee of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association in order for the committee to meet in executive session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. The time is 10 a.m. on July 22nd, 2026. The executive session of the Personnel Committee of the meeting has concluded, and I am reconvening the regular session of the Personnel Committee meeting pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. So,
Let me
item
share my.
six. All right.
I did it just a minute ago.
Well, while that's happening, item six was consideration and possible action on items discussed in executive session. We do not have any actions to take arising from executive session. So, item seven is consideration and possible action on the committee's charter. So, every year we review the charter. The staff has no recommended changes. Does anyone on the committee have anything to discuss relative to the committee's charter?
Not here.
Not
Okay,
here.
so no recommended changes to the charter. The final item is consideration and possible action regarding committee's calendar of activities. All we have is that the next committee meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, January 19th, 2027. Any problems from the committee with that date? Nope. Okay, then I believe we are ready to adjourn. The time is 10:02 a.m. on July 22nd, 2026, and this meeting of the Personnel Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association that has been held pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act is adjourned.
Thanks, everybody.